All right, now I'm recording. This is Eli Bosnick from God Awful Movies and Scathing Atheist, and you're listening to the Inciting Incident podcast because poof, jingly keys, jingly keys.
It's Sunday, and it's 7 p.m., which means it's time for the Inciting Incident podcast, supported by our patrons, and available on Libsyn, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, LiveJournal, Google+, The Hard Harry Show, News Radio, WHP 580, Rock and Emily's Bed Radios that are somehow appropriate for children that age, most tin cans connected with string, Tumblr, Snapchat, Zanga, LimeWire, WinMX, Napster, although we'll have to spell it with two Y's there to escape Big Brother, the DCI, the Enchantment Under the Sea Dance, the Plate and Pete and Pete's Mother's Head, and any other podcast app that somehow escaped this list. And now, here's your host, Al Lehman.
Good evening, and as the man with the golden voice told you, it's Sunday night, so that means it's time for Inciting Incident. My name is Al Lehman, and I somehow still have a career after talking to Eli Bosnick. Welcome to the show, and joining us is a wide variety of interesting people. First of all, Brian the Fuzzy, welcome back.
Oh, where else would I be? I live here, too.
You do?
Occasionally.
When the hell did that happen?
About 6 months ago, 8 months ago.
Was I there?
you were present for a good chunk of it, I think.
Oh, cool. I should tell myself that happened. And joining us once again is everyone's favorite hard left turner, Astrid Isley. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And joining us is somehow a registered Republican and patron and friend of the show, Eliza Winkler. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Wonders will
don't
never...
Don't judge my conservatism.
Oh, no. As we said before we started recording, it's not conservatism that we dislike, it's idiocy.
Yes, and, you know, we've already done our sacrifice for the day, so we will go up and pray at the altar of Obama once we're done with this, and we'll light candles, and, of course, we will pray for the rise of Social Security and the end of capitalism as we're done.
Praise Alinsky!
Indeed. Saul Alinsky and... what was the other one? The one that Fox News told us was evil? There was Saul Alinsky.
Soros.
George Soros, yeah. Of course. Because the...
he's on my speed dial.
The Koch brothers are just philanthropists.
Yeah.
So, hi, Eliza. Welcome to the mayhem. She is not only a registered Republican and patron of the show, but she increased her patronage after listening to our show. So, we're going to take her down to the mental health center afterwards and have her evaluated.
Something is clearly wrong.
It's fine. I live with a mental health professional. Ah, he says right. I don't have to be medicated or committed yet.
Yet.
Good qualifier there, yes.
So, see, the nice thing about listening to the podcast on your drive is you're not here, but now you're here. And clearly that's exposure to the animals, you know.
So now I can't get away? As long as you wash your hands on the way out, you'll be fine.
Right.
Okay.
You know, we wouldn't want the super hardcore conservatives to catch the gay or something.
And
so.
we've got our government-funded medical professional standing by to deal with your tumors. And not to worry, if you sat on any chair in this house and you weren't wearing lead underpants, we took care of that for you, too.
So this is what we do for a living. you contribute to this, of course. And you wear our shirt in public, so power to you.
With a monkey.
And, of course, the first thing I noticed was the shirt and not the monkey, because I am a whore.
He's man enough to admit it.
I am a whore and my own biggest mark. What can I say? So, Eliza, you are something of a creator and a writer, and we're going to get to some of the more interesting things that we're going to delve into a little bit later in the show, including your profession and your interesting journey. But first, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your blog and the fun stuff you've been telling us about before we started recording, because you may be surprised, but we actually talk to people before the mic's on.
God forbid, we're personable.
Indeed, indeed.
Okay, well, little bit about me. I grew up in Colorado.
Ooh.
In the Denver area. I grew up in Northland, which is just one of the many suburbs that just kind of blends in. And went to a tiny little high school. It was a charter school that my parents helped form because they didn't like the curriculum that the district had. So went there. My graduating class was something like 28 people, and that was the biggest one so far. It was a small school.
Yeesh.
Small.
So everyone was guaranteed a prom date.
Well, I had to go outside the school for my prom date, but anyways. And then I went to Colorado State University for 2 years up in Fort Collins. That's a beautiful campus. I loved it there. But I was getting very frustrated with all these stupid the core classes that you have to take. I was like, this has nothing to do with what I'm going to be doing because I was majoring in equine science.
Oh, okay.
Actually, science concentration, industry concentration, not science. I wasn't pre-vet. I wanted to go into like the therapeutic writing and everything because my little brother has Down syndrome. You met Willie, and he's just awesome. And so ever since the handicapped kids and stuff have had a real soft spot in my heart. But then I found out, okay, there's no living in that. This is a rich person's hobby. You go and you volunteer for this, and they don't give you crap. And I was like, okay, well, this ain't going anywhere, like, real quick, because, yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point, I was frustrated with my classes, and the only ones I was doing any good at were the ones that I chose to take.
Like
my Russian. I took 2 semesters of Russian. I don't remember crap of it except Yana Penemayo Paruski. You know, I don't understand Russian, you know.
Oh, so you're not the person that Trump was using to hack into the service, right?
Yet.
Yeah, it's funny because it's topical. No, I can relate. I took a good 2-3 semesters of Italian, and pretty much the only sentence I can say anymore is Professora, come si dice, which means professor, how do you say, etc.
This is
the phrase I use most often in class.
I can say I work at the library, but that would not be accurate.
Ein Bier, bitte.
Very important one to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Except I don't drink beer. But anyways.
We all have our flaws.
Yeah. So I was getting really frustrated with college, and I wasn't doing well in my classes, and my parents were paying for it. So I was feeling the mountains of guilt that Mormon parents heap on their kids. And I felt like, you know, I'm wasting my parents' money because I'm not doing well. And so I'm like, what the hell, I'll join the Army.
That's quite a job.
As you can imagine.
A bit of a turn at the traffic lights.
Yeah,
there.
I was like,
the Army has horses, but
yes,
not as many as they used to.
They don't do that anymore.
Oh.
My recruiter laughed at me when I asked, but I was like, well, they'll train me, and they'll pay me while they train me, and then I will have a life skill.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, I shouldn't have gone as MP. I should have been a linguist, but that's another story. So
it really is one of the only few paid internships that they offer to college-age people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's sad to say.
And at the time, I heard you talking about it. I don't even remember which podcast, because, like I said, I started at the beginning, and I've been working my way up.
We're
so
sorry.
No one should have to endure that all at once.
It's not all at once. I have to, you know, actually work and sleep once in a while, too. So.
Well, I'd consider that work, too. I mean, you have to get through all of our audio technical difficulties.
You don't listen to our podcast as much as you endure our podcast most nights.
There's only been one that I haven't been able to get through because the echo and the feedback was just driving me nuts. But
welcome to the Technical Difficulties Podcast with Brian and Al.
Woohoo! So my parents weren't exactly thrilled, to say the least, when I joined. And
I thought you were going to say when you started listening to us.
No, I haven't told them yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm still in the closet.
Was it more for the choice of profession or the other things that you're likely to be exposed to by going into the military? I'm kind of curious to know which was more...
It was more for the profession and actually, you know, starting work on my own and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Because though I was out of the house at 18, I wasn't self-sufficient until just before I joined the Army when I got a job at Taco Bell that summer. Yay, yo quiero. but I miss that chihuahua. He's kind of cute.
I know,
I don't have TV, so I don't even know what they've got on commercials anymore.
You don't want to know. It's better that you don't.
Safer that way. So I enlisted, and my departure date was October 10th, 2001.
Oh my!
So
I see where this is going.
And one of the guys I was working with there at Taco Bell was actually talking to the recruiters, and he was going to join up until 9/11 happened, and he quit.
Right.
He's like, no, I ain't going. But I still did, and it was, it was interesting. Basic training is a hell of a culture shock, shall we say. And especially for me, that I am... such a worrywart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I take anxiety on myself and I multiply it. My first night at college, I was at the dorms by myself, away from home. I was so anxious and everything. Like, I was sick. I couldn't sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And so, going to basic training, I was like, I'm going to be puking for 5 months because I can't sleep because I'm going to... But luckily, that didn't happen. I mean, who can think about puking and feeling upset when you've got a 6'9" black guy with a gold tooth yelling at you in your face? I mean, it's good times.
As awkward a time as that can be, I almost want to say, you know, that's kind of the brilliant point of it.
Yes, pretty much. And it was really interesting because said drill sergeant, Drill Sergeant Staples was his name.
Really?
Yes. True story.
That sounds like the name of a pro wrestler.
Yes.
Drill Sergeant Staples, here for duty of kicking your ass.
Pretty much. He was actually, like, once we got through basic training and we weren't just, you know, they couldn't even call you soldier. You're private.
You're boot.
Private.
Yeah.
You know, and even those of us that came in with some rank, because if you've got X number of college hour, credit hours, or whatever, I went in as PFC, a private first class, which is the third enlistment rank in the Army. So we weren't allowed to wear our rank during basic because, no, we all suck equally during basic. But then I joined as an MP. Because I was like, oh, I want to be a cop. And
they didn't bother to tell you that's not the same thing? Got it. Got it.
Well, actually...
Can we change your name to Bubby after that accent? Mommy, Daddy, I want to be a police officer.
Well, you know, they don't give you bullets. No, I'm just...
Can I be a constable, Mr. Scrooge? I want a nightstick for Christmas.
No, speaking of nightsticks, I want the ones that Germans have because they're weighted, so it's like a doorstop.
Oh, Jesus.
You swing it once and it goes... Boy, it just hits you like seven times.
Yeah, the Germans, they don't do anything half-assed, do they?
No, they don't. Frau Winkler.
You see here, we have the stick, and we go, BAM! You forget your own ideas!
So, I mean, had I been smart about it, I would have joined as a linguist, because mm-hmm. I did just take two semesters of Russian and get, you know, a B plus, A minus.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's funny because before you join, they make you take the ASVAB, which is the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery. Mm-hmm. And I took it in high school because, hey, it got you out of half a day's worth of class. Sure, right? I mean, everybody took it, you know? And then my stupid fault was that I did so well on it that then I had the recruiter stalking me
for the rest
of my senior year.
Yeah.
I mean, Air Force, and I was getting pamphlets by the busload from these people.
Same here.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, by the time I did enlist, it was a couple years later, so I had to retake the ASVAB. Well, so then I did even better. Okay, so they, the highest you can get is a 99. You know, you're in the 99th percentile. I got a 97.
That's very what cool. I got. See, smart people.
Yeah, but see, you were smart and you went Ivy League, and I don't even have an associate's. Good times.
Eventually.
But yeah.
At some point, I'm sure.
Still did it. Oh, golly. Where was I?
ASVAB?
Yep.
Yes. So then, the ASVAB is broken down into different sections, mm-hmm. one of which they look at very critically is the GT score, the general technical score. And with these ones, like, the highest you can score is, like, 132 or 136 or something like that, and not a single one of these subscores of mine was below, like, 117.
What were the questions like?
I mean, there were simple math questions, but there were, like, 90 of them in, you know, 4.5 minutes. So it's like you couldn't even think. It's just push the button and just go. Yeah. And then, I mean, they had mechanics questions like, you know, okay, well, if this cog is going this way, then what is this one 17 cogs later going to be, like, which direction is it going? And so you
something I'm really glad I played the Incredible Machine when I was in elementary
I wasn't allowed video games. Oh. They're the devil. They're a waste of time.
That part's certainly true.
That's the point.
That is the point.
World of Warcraft. I know about the time wasted.
I am a recovering Warcraftaholic.
Yes.
Legion did not sucker me back in, although I still dropped $60 on Overwatch, so damn you, Blizzard!
No, I quit the WoW crack as soon as they changed the character models and my chicks weren't cute anymore, and they looked like failures that had been dropped out of RuPaul's Drag Race.
That's fair.
So, sort of the telling the truth! What are we talking about? I know some of these words.
So, with the general technical score, I think I had like a 120-something.
Mm-hmm.
So, when I got to reception, which is your first place once you get to basic training, before they actually send you off to your basic training company. This is where they send you through and you get all your shots and I mean, everything. They give you this shot in the butt that feels like everybody described it as the peanut butter shot.
The inciting incident story.
Yes.
And, you know, you get deloused and all that stuff.
I mean,
yeah.
Everything. I mean, we sat there, we had to roll up our sleeves on both sides, and then it was like a gauntlet of shots. True story, you can't make this up.
I didn't accuse you of anything. It's just, you know, the last time I heard about lining up and shots in the ass, it was in a completely different context. And that's why I had to introduce myself to everybody in the neighborhood and walk around. Hi, I'm your neighbor.
I don't judge.
Of course. Play through. Play on.
5-yard penalty. Move on.
So in reception, and it was right after we got all these shots, too, they pulled me and a couple other people from our group aside and stuck us with some other people from some of the other groups that had just got there and said, okay, because your GT score was so high, you are going to take the D-Lab, which is the Defense Language Aptitude Battery.
Oh, boy.
So,
more tests.
So,
gosh.
Yeah, and so, okay, this one is like a pass-fail kind of thing, and, well, though they actually have a score on it, but you get your headphones and you sit down, and part of it is written, the first part is written, but then the next part is they take English words with foreign grammar rules, and then you have to tell them what it means. So they're like, okay, if we put an E on the end of this word, then it means plural. So cat E means plural cats. And I was like, that's Russian.
Hey, I found a link.
I just took 2 semesters of Russian. Okay, bring it, you know.
Just going to pick that brick up.
But then the problem with all that was, I mean, it was so quick, and then because it was, you know, it sounds so weird hearing these foreign grammar rules, even if you're used to hearing them just a couple months before on these weird words that you don't even remember what they mean 15 years later. I mean, it just, your brain is like, what do I do? And so, I mean, the timing was getting to me, but even with all that, when it was all done, they're like, okay, you passed, you got an 89 or something like that. And I was like, huh. Damn it. I'm in the wrong line of work, man. So then, you know, move on to basic training, and then, you know, you get yelled at by your Drill Sergeant Staples, Drill Sergeant Sanchez, who was also well over 6 feet, and another brick wall, you know, Puerto Rican from New York. And then my platoon had little tiny black woman, and she was a cage kicker. She was a correctional officer.
Oh.
Because the company that I went to in basic training was the only one that also trained corrections as well as MP. Because you don't get as many correctional officers through. Because, I mean, who wants to spend their life in prison? This sounds like fun. So, and she used to tell us, I mean, she would sit there and she'd be like, privates, prisoners have more rights than you do, you know? And you're just like, what did I do?
Privates are the new black.
Depends on who's privates.
And who's black.
So, I mean, this was a very interesting 5 months of my life. And with MP school, it's one station unit training. So we were in the same barracks with the same drill sergeants for our MP school, which is AIT, Advanced Individual Training, as we were for basic.
Oh.
So we didn't even change bunks. We were still there, and it was like, okay, we can now call you a soldier. You're a soldier. Good job, private. You can wear your rank. You're still the scum of the, you know. I mean, well, they did ease up a little bit during...
A scooch. Yeah.
Harley Ermey doesn't actually kick you in the face anymore. He just threatens it.
Okay. No, they weren't allowed to do that. And, when I got out and after I was already a civilian there working at Fort Bliss, you know, we heard, they have stress cards now. And they yell at them too much and they can pull out their stress card. And I was like, are you freaking serious? Still cannot confirm that, so I'm...
Okay.
I don't know. That's just...
That sounds like something Kyle told me if he didn't say it on the air, so I believe it.
Yeah, I know somebody that I knew there at Fort Bliss, he got in huge amounts of trouble for sneaking a cell phone in.
Ooh. Oh, my.
And now they can have cell phones. They can use their cell phones on their hour of personal time. And I was like... During basic! We couldn't even have a CD player and listen to music!
Wow.
I mean, we were, like, you had an hour at the end of the day before lights out, before you had to go to bed, that you had to deal with your uniforms, you had to shine your boots, because this was back when we wore the Woodlands green camo, not
right.
the digital ACU stuff. And you had black boots, and they needed to be black. And it didn't matter if you rushed through knee-deep mud the night before, your boots had better be black and shine to the next morning. So you had an hour to do that and write your family if you had time. So, I mean, like, and they have cell phones?
Yeah, the concessions.
We don't even have time to write our family half the time, but...
Well, it makes sense, then, that to keep the cell phones, it's probably easier to pen a tweet than it is to actually write an actual letter.
Yeah. Maybe, but then that also means, you know, they've got to charge it, and they're going to... But, yeah, so then, I mean, I was still a good Mormon girl all through basic. I went to church and all that, and actually, my faith and reading the Book of Mormon and everything like that actually... I felt helped me a lot through that time because it was very difficult. There were a few verses that I held dear. And then I got to Fort Bliss and all hell broke loose, I guess. that was like the beginning of the end for all that. But yeah, we'll get to that.
And you thought you wouldn't have anything to talk about.
Now you got me curious, all hell broke loose. What was it? Alien attack? Zombie invasion? What?
Well, yeah. Okay. There's a zombie in my knee. that's another story. Didn't I tell you about that?
Probably, but share with the class.
Okay. Yes.
This is derailing this whole train of thought.
Yeah, I know.
This is my job.
Yay.
This is what we do.
See, and then I'm blonde, so I can't stay on a train of thought as it is, so now I'm just going to be off on all these.
Well, then you'll fit right in.
Yes! Okay. So, when I was in high school, my 11th grade year, I was on the softball team. Stealing seconds, I hyperextended my knee, tore my ACL. Good times. So then when I was in college, after my first year, I had ACL reconstructive surgery. And then it was fine. It was great. I could run, jump, skip, whatever, all over again. So I joined the Army. And then in AIT, at the confidence course, there was this one obstacle, and it involved a log at waist height, and it was on this rail, basically, and so it would roll back and forth, and so you had to grab it and roll with it and roll over it. Well... Unfortunately, I led with my right leg, which was my bad knee, the one that had the surgery already. And when I landed, the weight, the fact that the log was still going just drove me down, and I re-sprained it, and so...
we take joint injuries very seriously
yes,
in this house.
We do. Yes. So there went my ACL, again. And then after I got to... Fort Bliss, it turned out, okay, well, your ACL's gone, you need to have surgery. Again.
You're fine.
So, with my second knee surgery, because they'd already taken a bone tendon bone graft from my patellar tendon, they didn't want to go and take a hamstring graft or go into my other... knee and take a graft. So they actually took a bone tendon bone graft from a cadaver stuck it in my knee. So I have got a dead person in my knee. So I like to say the zombie apocalypse is going on in my knee.
I get
it. So if I ever knee anybody in the face, I'm just going to say the zombie did it.
Cool.
But then, I mean, that led to all kinds of problems. And I've had osteoarthritis in my knee since I was 20.
Oh, dear.
So 15 years now, so I've got this really fancy high-speed knee brace, compliments of the American taxpayer and the VA.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
I pay taxes too, so thank you.
We're all welcome.
Yay!
But, I mean, without that knee brace, I wouldn't ever be able to run, because without it, my knee, like, swells up like a cantaloupe after any sort of anything, and it's just miserable. Yeah. So.
That's what you get for stealing second.
I know.
I'm told that's one of the commandments. Thou shalt not steal.
Second.
Even
second base. Second. Yeah. You know, I fared slightly better than that guy in Hook who tried it, but, you know, take the wins where you can get them.
I understood that reference.
I occasionally land one. All right, so you've got zombie knee, you're going through training, and you're still a little nice Mormon girl.
At Fort Bliss.
Yeah.
And well, Elder Cunningham came and said, let's go to Uganda. Wait, wrong story.
Yeah.
Okay.
My training was at Fort Leavenwood. The Fort Leonard Wood. Felt like Leavenworth. But that's in Kansas.
Well, that's okay. Nobody remembers anything in Kansas.
Yeah. Well, my sister's there. She's in Wichita.
Well, she's a person. We said
yes.
Thanks.
Okay.
I've been to Kansas once in my life. There's nothing in Kansas.
This is true. yeah. That's why Dorothy wanted to leave.
Why she wanted to go back, though. Go back to your crushing depression-era dirt farm.
I don't know, because she had Toto with her.
Right.
Sell the ruby slippers, buy a house.
Absolutely, because it's Kansas, so they're, what, 37 cents back then? Yeah.
And that's for a few acres.
Right. Honestly, I would love to go back to Kansas, but only because I passed through there on this road trip and I saw this, like, graveyard for fake abortion fetuses. And there was this, like, Jesus statue above them with his arms outreached, looking utterly indifferent. But, yeah, there are all these billboards, like, anti-abortion billboards in this graveyard. And I have to go back and photograph that, man.
There's like, what, 12 people living there per square mile in Kansas? There's only 12 more people than there are on Mars.
Thank you, Mr. Wool.
You're welcome.
And you had me at fake abortion graveyard. Back up.
I think I read an article on that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would love to read an article about it.
Or,
oh my god.
It's buried in the depths of Facebook, but I don't know if it's that one or if it's one that was somewhere else, but yeah. I guess some dude was going to abortion clinics and instead of them doing whatever with the fetuses, he was actually taking them and burying them.
So, geez.
That's horrifying.
Yes. They've got little tombstones.
Honestly, if I ever needed an abortion, I would just hope that they would use the stem cells for some really awesome science.
Either that or ask me to play Danny Boy on a little kazoo.
Why not both? But seriously, if some strange man walked into my clinic and offered to bury my no longer viable cells, I would be so horrified. Call security.
That sounds like
stranger
someone with a
danger.
Fetish. Like,
yeah.
What exactly do you want
to eat
with?
My insides?
Yeah. So you were telling a story. And you've listened to enough shows to know this happens literally every time.
I should have brought an outline like I made for my book. Okay. It took a lot of effort.
So we were at Kansas and abortion graveyards.
Okay,
and all that
well,
stuff.
Yeah, we're. I wasn't there, so I'll pass on that.
Leonard Wood.
Yes. Fort Lost in the Woods, as we called it, and it was in the middle of nowhere. There's literally nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
It's if I recall, the little town that's next to it is like St. Roberts, Missouri, or something like that, and. My drill sergeant, I wish I could remember her name.
We'll call her Carl.
No, because we don't like Carl. And
that's right.
Okay.
Oh, she's a good
okay.
one? All right.
I mean, well, they're all bastards at the beginning of training, but then by the end, you know, they're slightly human.
Yeah.
You know, and they treat you slightly human, and, yeah.
Progress. Incremental progress.
Yeah. So, what was her name?
Let's just go with G.I. Jane.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, okay, so... So Drill Sergeant Jane.
And Private Blondie. Go on.
Yes. Don't judge.
I didn't judge anything. You inferred that, not me.
That's called a callback, you see. That you said once before that he's now referring to.
Oh, yes. It's true. Anyways, so... Train of thought?
Jane?
Jane, I don't know.
G.I. Jane came to Private Blondie and said...
Oh, yes. Well, not just me. She told all of us. The biggest thing that the town had was the Walmart. Mm. And she's like, I took leave to go to the grand opening because there's nothing here. I mean, you go out the gate and there's a bunch of strip clubs and tattoo parlors.
I'm listening.
Sounds like a good time to me.
Yeah, you said literally nothing. You didn't describe the entertainment.
Two major food groups. Go on.
As, you know, the scum of the army, we're not allowed to go there. So, I mean... And it's funny because when I got to Fort Bliss, I noticed outside the gates there's strip clubs and there's tattoo parlors. And I'm like, do they follow the army? Does the army follow them? I don't know.
It's the army's portable strip clubs and tattoo parlors. Well, all on wheels and fun in the Atlanta Carnival. I've always wanted to do that Bond villain's carny voice. Story. We've made about 45 seconds of progress in the last 15 minutes, so...
Awesome. Okay.
Strip clubs, tattoo parlors, and Walmart. Okay, we're back.
Yeah. Kansas. Tell me.
Okay, so then I got stationed at Fort Bliss, had knee surgery, zombie in my knee, dated a German...
Yeah.
He was part of the Luftwaffe, actually. Like, true story. You know, they had foreign military stationed there at Bliss because Bliss was the air defense center. And so foreign militaries would come in and be like, oh, train us on your Patriots. And we're like, okay. And so, you know, they'd take him out to the desert and they'd shoot rockets at whatever they shot rockets at. I don't know. I wasn't ADA. I mean, that's all they do is push a button. They're like... Okay, you know, so...
Yeah, and blowing shit up would improve Kansas, so I imagine that worked out well.
Texas.
In Texas.
Fort Bliss is in Texas.
Same thing.
We've shifted the geography a bit.
Yes.
It's in the middle of nothing.
Whatever. Pretty much.
Another place that I would expect a fake fetus graveyard.
Well, I think you need to go a little east for that because El Paso is like the one little corner of Texas that's blue in a red state.
All right.
Yeah, I actually have friends in El Paso. I did not know that Fort Bliss was there.
I thought Austin gave it a run for its money there as well.
It's right there at 54 and I-10, basically. Yeah, it's just right there.
Baby. And that's been the roadmaps portion of the show. Tune in next week when we go to Colorado!
Been there. Yeah.
So you've said.
True story. My cats would never do this. But that monkey at the fur, dude.
Absolutely.
So I'm stationed at Fort Bliss. I got out after... a total of 3 years, 3 months, and 1 day, not that I was counting, on a medical discharge, because my knee was crap and with the arthritis and everything, and I couldn't run, and I'd try and run, and it'd swell up, and so I'm like, okay, this crap ain't right. So, the starting of the whole medical board was just a pain, and part of the process was the dictation. And so the doctor sits down with your medical records and just reads through it. And so she's sitting there reading through it, and osteoarthritis and blah, blah, and I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, it's right here. It showed up on your MRI before your surgery. Nobody told me that! I was getting out of the army, you know, year and a half or so later, and I had arthritis in my knee, and I had not been told. So, yes, I highly recommend any sort of military medical, if you want to find out what's going on, they won't tell you. So
lovely.
You're fine. Go run. Drink water.
It's like Call of Duty, just like in the commercials, right?
Ramirez,
right.
Do everything.
Yes.
I was stationed with a few of those, but you know, I was in El Paso, and a lot of people did, you know, get stationed there because it was close to home. Mm. So, yeah, so then I got out, and then I had a little lapse in my employment history, but then I was hired on with the civilian police there on the base, and I was there a total of 12 years.
Wow.
At Fort Bliss, which is, if I may say, a really long time for a white chick to be in a I mean, you know, they used to call me Weta, which is blondie.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was always interesting because, you know, you'd go into Walmart or something like that and they'd start talking Spanish to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, gringa? Do I look like Spanish is my first language? I'm like, no comprendo. And they get all offended and stuff. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't speak Spanish. So, that was very interesting time. And then Dylan, my very new husband, is the whole reason that I moved here to Central Pennsylvania. And
well, so it wasn't much of a transition for you, really.
Yes, it was. I don't have Mexican food here.
But you were talking about you meant real Mexican food.
Yeah, yes.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Mexican food is delicious. I used to live in New Mexico.
I know. Yes. I mean, that's one of the two things, other than my house that I still have down there, that I really miss from El Paso. It's the food, because, I mean, they're all, like, first generation over, and they have Abuelita in the kitchen cooking authentic everything, and, I mean, it was great.
At this point, I would sell my soul for a good wet burrito.
I just remember from a Gabriel Iglesias bit talking about Chico's Tacos.
Make me vomit.
On cue.
See? Chico's is this thing that apparently you either love it or you hate it. I fall on the hate it spectrum, mm-hmm. except their green chili. It was really good, but I mean, I couldn't stand their rolled tacos because they were drenched in this, seemed to me like watered down tomato juice and then with melted cheese on top. And so they were all soggy and just disgusting. But one of my sergeants there swore there was nothing better than Chico's Tacos to get rid of a hangover. So, of course, he's the one that would stumble in every day saying, oh, I am never drinking again. And that was a daily ritual for him. So,
jeez.
But now, before we go on,
okay.
I heard it in the wedding speech, but our fellow co-hosts here and the audience do not know, you met your husband and moved here how?
Yes, okay. So, I am of the nerdy persuasion.
No kidding.
Yes.
You're at home here. It's okay.
Yes. Due to an ex-boyfriend when I was in the military, he got me gaming. My first game was Diablo 2, and then I played my first first-person shooter, which was Raven Shield, Rainbow Six 3.
Oh, okay.
Tom Clancy,
yeah.
Yes. Which, that one I really miss, because it was a lot of fun, and the guys I played with, I mean, they had, like, a pistols-only adversarial server. That was so much fun. So it was like, I'd get the 50-caliber Deagle and with the extended with the extended magazine, so I'd have more than 5 bullets.
We would call that a hand cannon.
It was awesome. I broke one of the maps, crashed the server with that thing, but anyways.
Congratulations.
And then your princess is in another castle, and you have to...
Yes. My life is like...
Running
a
power slam.
Woo!
He's back.
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah, so then, after that, then I started playing WoW within the first year that it came out.
Okay.
And it was... Oh, golly. After an expansion or two... Well, during the second expansion, I got pissed off at the Alliance, and I went to Horde.
Uh-huh.
Made my little Blood Elf Chica, and so I was all cute, and I was a priest, and I was a glutton for punishment, because I leveled her, for those nerds that know my nerd speak. I've missed this.
I am one of you.
Yes. I leveled her up.
Uh-huh.
Discipline and holy.
Uh-huh.
Because this was before you had dual spec.
Right, right.
So I was disciplined and holy because, I mean, well, my druid that I leveled initially, I leveled Resto.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I was like, they never, ever do any damage and these things never die and they kill me, you know, and...
Well, they kill you after about an hour and a half. I mean, that's the fun part about playing a disc.
Entangling roots was a wonderful thing with my druid. Poor owls.
I know. Defending my post! Defending my post! Yes, sir! Yes, sir!
What? Oh, show! Yeah! Yeah! I am totally engaged in understanding what you say right now. It makes me laugh and or smile.
Yeah, so... Okay. After I had switched to Horde, and I was there with my little priest running around, and I'd just do little pickup groups, and I'd heal the group, and go through Wailing Caverns or whatever, and that's when I was picked up by my guild.
Mm-hmm.
Because they see that, you know, I'm just this little bastard with just a name and no guild over my head.
Right.
So they're like, here, join our guild. And I was like, okay. And I stayed with them, and I leveled up, and we did a little bit of raiding, but we never had enough people to do any hardcore. Okay, on this day for 7 hours, excuse me, I have a full-time job. So, so it was with them that I came in contact with Dylan. Because he had played... like Dark Age of Camelot with them.
Oh, Lord. Okay.
Years before.
That's a reference.
And then he had lost touch with them when I guess his old gaming rig died. But then he got a new one and he was like, oh, what the hell, I'll try WoW. And so he got it. And of all the servers, of which there are many.
Yes, there are.
He picked Storm Reaver because this sounded cool.
Mm.
And then, of the two factions, he chose Horde. I don't know why. And then, you know, so he has his little tune and he's running around in the world and he sees somebody saying something just in world chat. And looking at the name, he's like,
wait a minute.
I know him. Because this one friend of ours. Even though I know his name is William, he goes Cal.
Yeah.
He always had K-A-L at the beginning of every character name.
Right.
It was some variety on that. So, I guess Dylan messaged him, said, Cal, is that you? And he's like, oh, Dylan, what the hell, here, you know, come, we've got a guild, right? You know, so he joins the guild. I come home from vacation, and there's this new bastard. And I was like, okay, this isn't going to last long. He's just here just because they're too nice, and Vicky, who is our guild master, was just the sweetest person in the world, and she would help everybody. She'd help you level your crafts and give you money for your mount and
right.
for your epic mount, and then people would take advantage and leave.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, great, this is going to be one of these freaking douchebags that's going to show up and just take advantage of Vicky's just awesomeness, and then, you know, but then it turned out to be Dylan, and he's, yeah, I don't even remember the first thing that I said to him in Vent, just that it was very, very much a huge smartass remark.
Vent is short for Ventrilo, it's a common voice chat system that World of Warcraft players use.
story.
I'm just helping you. Just helping you find the breadcrumbs again.
Okay, okay.
That's all I'm doing.
Do I have a glazed over look right now or something?
Yes, but that's kind of usual.
For the last
okay.
10 minutes.
There was someone who told me I should watch a thing, and they said, be careful because you'll be lost and confused. And I said, and that makes up 90% of my life. What's your point?
Leroy!
I'll be sure to we'll swap stories when the microphone's off and you just have to worry about following along.
Oh, it was good times. I miss it. But, yeah, so we started
make Azeroth great again.
We started talking in game and just hanging out and whatever, and then at one point, Cal talked to me and he said, have you ever noticed that when you're on, Dylan doesn't go away? He doesn't go get food. He doesn't go pee. He, you know, because he stays there and talks to you.
Oh.
And I was like, no, I haven't noticed, because I am, like, the most oblivious person in the world when it comes to any sort of social interaction for stuff.
Second most oblivious right here.
So, I mean, I don't notice these things.
Mm-hmm.
So then we started talking more, and, you know, then there was a Ventrilo app for the phone, so we could talk offline, and then I don't even remember what he said, but I panicked and I disappeared.
Oh.
I was like, I can't do this right now, I'm freaking out. And so then it was probably at least a year before I got back on WoW, and then he was there again, and, you know, we were talking and whatever, and it was all just very polite. And at one point he said, when it was just the two of us there talking, he's like, are we gonna ever talk about the elephant in the room? And I was like, I don't know that I can. Mm-hmm. Not right now. And he's like, okay. So then, you know, more time passes, we talk some more, and at this point it wasn't a lot of time, it was a little bit of time that passed, you know, and then we started chatting more Ventrilo, and then we started Skyping, and I worked third shift there at Bliss, and so I'd be driving around to check on the guys, because I was a corporal, so I was checking on the our officers on the gate and stuff, and I would have him on Skype sitting in the cup holder. Like, my whole shift. He'd sit there in the cup holder, and I'd be like, hang on, I gotta, yeah, are you guys okay? Yeah, we're okay. Okay, I'm done. You know, and so we would talk all the time. Like, constantly. And then at one point, I was like, okay, if I were to come out and visit, he's like, okay. So,
hey there, groovy chick.
So, that was August of 13
mm-hmm.
that I came out for a week. Because I was already really fed up with my job there, and they were talking about downsizing the force, which has happened since mm-hmm. they've riffed a bunch of the government workers there. The, mm-hmm. Because they turned it over to the MPs and stuff. RIF stands for Reduction in Force.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they laid off a bunch of federal workers. Some of them they found other jobs for. One of them I know, he's a realtor now down mm-hmm. there in El Paso, and I really hope he's doing well. He was a goofball. But I was already fed up with mm-hmm. where I was. So I was already looking at other jobs. I'm like, okay, USA Jobs, here I come. You know, yeah. And that's the government search engine for all the federal jobs that mm-hmm. are all over the place. So I had applied for a police sergeant position in Carlisle. And I applied for, like, some secretarial stuff because I'm sick of the uniform. It sucks. I've had to wear man boots and a uniform and wear my hair up for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time. And it just wears on you. It's no fun. So I had applied for these other jobs and they said, okay, you're qualified. but then I'd never hear back.
Right.
And I was like, this sucks. So that's why I applied for the police sergeant, because I'm like, at least I'm qualified for that.
Mm-hmm.
I was already acting sergeant on the police side for months as a corporal, because, you know, the other sergeants were out on emergency stuff, and one had to have an appendectomy, so he was out for a while. Good times. So I was waiting to hear back from that, so I just wanted to see if this thing with Dylan was as real as it felt. You know, I wanted to know, you know, because I'm like, well, other than feeling very old and, you know, everything, you know, passing 30 and I'm still single, you know, and all this kind of stuff, I was like, okay, I want to know. So I flew out. And of all the times that your flight actually lands early, you know, and I'm there in little tiny Harrisburg International, I'm like, really? Yeah. There's 3.5 gates. How is this international? But, you know, El Paso Airport wasn't much bigger, but they probably, you know, had puddle jumpers that went straight to Juarez. So, I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's international.
More than one nation.
Yep.
So
Harrisburg occasionally goes to Toronto, so it counts.
Aw. So I got there, and I was like, okay, I'm like 20 minutes before my flight was supposed to land, and he's not here. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe, you know, baggage claim takes forever. So I come out and go down the stairs. The bags are already there. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, you have to wait like half an hour in El Paso before they even, you know, and then it's like when you creak and groan, and then it's like, okay, and then the baggage claim decides it wants to start up, and you're like, could use some WD-40. But, so I'm like, okay, so I got my bags, and I'm like, so where do I wait for him? Do I wait down here? Do I wait up there? Do I, you know, because you've been there. And
yeah.
So the baggage claim is down here. You go up the stairs, and there's a couple little, I don't know, Amish-made rocking chairs or something.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right next to the exit
yep.
gate. So I'm like, okay, well, if he's coming and he's going to be waiting for me to come through where security is, I'll wait there. So I'm just sitting there, and I'm sitting there. And my phone's about to die. Like, I've got, like, 7% left on the battery of my phone. And he doesn't have a cell phone.
Oh.
He didn't even have a phone at the time. He didn't get one until after I moved here. So I was like, I can't even call him and you know, all this stuff. So I'm, like, freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm texting my friend Gail. She was at the wedding. She's the one that stood in the circle with us. And she's like, you'll be fine. Just calm down. You know, he's not going to leave you hanging. You know, he's going to be there. And so I'm like, okay. So I'm sitting there. And then a few minutes later, here comes this man. And he is walking with a purpose. He is moving. And, you know, Dylan's got long hair. Comes down to about the middle of his back. And he didn't have it up in a ponytail, so it free and floaty and stuff, and I was like, there he is, you know, and he's walking, and he's looking at the security board and everything, and then he turns and looks at me, and I would just, I love him, okay, so, I mean, so, there it is, and it worked, and so I moved here, and that move was hellacious, and I hated it, but I am here. And you guys have fireflies, which is really cool. Well, you don't have them in El Paso, didn't have them in Colorado, so I did not see a firefly until 2 years ago.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, that is the coolest thing ever! And so I'm running around the yard like a kid catching these, and Dylan's just like, I don't know this woman! Take her back! You know, and and then, you know, Nancy, my mother-in-law, was just, you know, laughing. And she's like, yeah, they're fun for children of all ages. And I'm like, good, because I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life because they abuse me way too much. So, yes.
So, yeah, there we go.
Okay.
Very cool.
Yeah, and we've only asked two questions in an hour, so we're on a good pace. But we're going to interrupt the questions here because Astrid asked people to do something last week, and one person responded specifically
because he wanted to tell his own fuck you, Carl, story. So therefore, I'm going to read Adrian's note. Adrian, patron of the show and awesome French guy.
Yes.
Who would dare upset Adrian? Adrian's a literal angel.
Yes.
Read it.
I will read it, and then afterwards we will go around and each say a fun little story we can do for this Carl. So this is from Adrian, who was on a previous episode. It all started when I was 13. My Carl was a history teacher, the most beloved history teacher in the whole school. Wherever he went, there was always at least two students chatting with him. He was always smiling and funny. The teacher everybody wanted to have. He was my history teacher for 2 years. When I was 15, I changed school, and the history teacher in this new class was very scary, hard on discipline, but most relevant to the story, he would regularly ask us to go visit museums on weekends and write reports. I don't remember how I got his number, but I called Carl, and we would go to the museums together, and then go back to his place where he would help me with the report. And at the time, I didn't see how it was wrong for a 45-plus-year-old single man to hang out with a 15-year-old boy. It happened more than half a dozen times that year, and I had great fun. The following year, new history teacher, things got better, but I carried on meeting with Carl. We would go to his place for a bit, chat for a while, and then go shopping to my nerdy shops, oftentimes tabletop RPG shops. Gee, it's a shame he doesn't fit in with us. And that's where it got really awkward. During the quote-unquote chatting times, he would always at some point put his hand on my thighs, and I would lean forward and put my forearms on my thighs, too, to prevent his hand from going up, you know, further along my thigh. And it got weirder and weirder. After a while, I noticed that he put his other hand on his crotch, and then a few encounters later, he would even unzip his pants. The very last time I saw him, he clearly had his not-on-my-thigh hand inside his underpants. I was 18 or 19, and I never called back. You might ask why I would call him and meet him again after I experienced clearly inappropriate contact, although I didn't realize it at the time. Partly because when we went shopping, he regularly bought me stuff. Partly, I suppose, because I was young, naive, impressionable, and under the influence of this person I highly respected. When one is young and doesn't have many friends, being noticed by and having a relationship with a person with such an aura taps into something deep, and he used that against me. He called me once, 1 year after I stopped contacting him. A year later, I saw him on the street, but he didn't. I never pressed charges, it never even crossed my mind. Does it count as molestation? I don't know. There was no violence, and he never touched anything other than my upper thigh, although, again, he was... While doing so. But it was definitely an abusive relation where he used, intentionally or not, his aura, authority as a former teacher, and money to make me feel like it was something I had to accept in order to maintain this relationship that I craved. And that's an absolutely disgusting thing to do to a vulnerable teenager. I absolutely agree with you, Adrian. Does that count as molestation? Yes,
yes,
absolutely, without question. You did not want it, and you were not of age to consent to it. So there is absolutely no question. So my question for the panel is, for this, Carl, if you could do one thing with that hand as he reached back to do something inappropriate with it, what's the most fun and painful thing you can think to do with that hand so that Adrian never has to see it again?
Well, I am getting the stare to talk first. And first, I just want to say, Adrian, I am so fucking sorry to hear that. I want to pull you into my chest and hug you tight. My heart goes out to you. But I want to stick that hand in a fucking garbage disposal. And I know that I said this with one of the other fuck you, Carl stories, but what can I say? I'm a fan of the movie Hard Candy. It hits me very, very personally, and just like slowly in and out, almost like a jerk off motion, right in the fucking garbage disposal.
I approve of this message. Fuck you, Carl.
Fuck you, Carl.
Eliza, you're up.
Oh, jeez.
On the spot,
I can relate to where he's coming from a little bit, because I have been in emotionally abusive
right
relationships. This brings out the artist in me.
Make it poetic.
I might go with the way that I killed one of the characters in one of my stories.
Okay.
And have a cloned exotic extinct tiger chew his hand off and then rip his throat out and let him bleed out and gurgle on his own blood until
there
good
you
times
go.
As he slowly dies, nice painful death.
Fantastic. We knew you would fit in here. So, Brian, we've had two good answers on that one, so I have one for you.
Oh.
We
could
take Adrian and put him in any movie you want, where there's an awesome kill shot scene or awesome death scene. Adrian gets to be the perpetrator and gets a badass line, and the other person dies in the most horribly awesome way imaginable. Which movie do we pick?
Okay, I'm actually glad you said this one, because I'm going to go back on what I had in mind for the punishment for Carl's hand. So I'm going to say Adrian gets to take the place of Tim Curry as the evil demonic monster clown in Stephen King's It, and he gets to have Carl stick his hand down a rainy storm drain, rip it off at the shoulder, and then cackle madly while taunting him about how much things float down here. Like the piece of shit that Carl is.
We all float down here, Carl. So I've got one that I know you will appreciate.
Okay.
I'm going to put Adrian and Carl in double team. And Adrian is going to be Jean-Claude Van Damme. And Carl is going to be Mickey Rourke.
Okay.
And Carl is going to die stepping on a landmine while a tiger leaps at him in the center of the Roman Colosseum as Adrian and his two friends, Dennis Rodman, and nobody cares about the other one, are saved by the Coke machine in the Roman Colosseum.
Adrian gets to fry Carl in the Coke.
Yes, he does.
All right.
That's for you, Adrian. And speaking of Carl's stories, I believe you had one you wanted to bring up.
Hold on, though. When I said my message on the last episode, I said that we would insult a person of their choice and compliment them. I've called Adrian a literal angel. Your turn.
Okay.
Okay, just to clarify, Adrian is the one who called in from the Paris?
Yep.
Yeah, that's that Adrian.
Okay. From what I know of Adrian, it seems he is a man of awesome character and good standing and just resilient to be able to come back from the things that he saw and what he experienced and to be able to carry on a normal life. And I wish him all the best.
Good.
Adrian, I'm gonna give you a title formerly held by Mr. Stone Cold Steve Austin and call you truly the toughest SOB that I have ever met, and my life is infinitely more enriched from having met you and heard your story.
And of course, when we interviewed you, I told you while you were there that the fact that you were in a terrorist attack and then just coolly got a taxi and went home, I told you were the most badass person I've ever met in my life, and I stand by that, especially since you blew up Carl in the Roman Colosseum. But I'm going to add in the fact that your voice is like liquid butter, and we should have your voice in all of the things that involve someone talking over a radio. I believe it should be in airports, especially the Harrisburg airport with the Amish rocking chairs, so we can say, "It's all right, Eliza." I can't do your voice, but say, "Oh, it's all right, Eliza. Dylan's on the way, and he's going to stare at you. It's going to be awesome." There we go.
Jesus.
Yay.
I'm going to put you in the center of the cutest love story I've heard all insert period of time here.
Excellent. Happiness is Warcraft friends and a warm kitty in the lap.
Yes.
Heck yeah.
Yep. Kitty Lane upside down. Indeed. So, anyway. Yes. Liza, you have a Carl that you would like to address.
Yes. For me, the Carl is like a conglomerate Borg-like entity of all the scumbags that I have to deal with, because I am the only female officer in my police department, and I deal with the same people every day because I work in a enclosed environment. I work on a military base, and so, you know, we're constantly coming across the same people, so you get to know them, and then, like, at least half of them are just these creepy bastards, and there's this Especially one that, I mean, I can't impersonate him because he whistles when he talks. And, you know, he's like, how are you today? You know, you're looking nice. And he'll say this kind of stuff after I've had an emotional night. You know, like when we had to put one of the cats down and we... You know, I was up all night. I was crying. I've got puffy eyes. And he's like, you're looking nice. And no, I'm not.
Not the
you
time.
Know? And, and it's just all these creepy guys. And the fact that as a chick, I can't be my goofy self mm-hmm. and smile and laugh without them thinking that I am flirting with them and mm-hmm. that I want to get in their pants and see what they have to offer. Whereas they can joke around and it's not taken that way, and just the double standard. So the F you to all those Carls and all of their crap that I have to deal with on a daily basis.
To see what you have to what they have to offer you, I can only imagine it's either a race car bed or NFL sheets for how fucking juvenile this has to be.
Are those things mutually exclusive?
No, not in the slightest.
Fantastic.
It's
and this
ridiculous.
Is coming, yeah, it's unbelievably juvenile. And this is from a guy who's got an entire collection of My Little Pony memorabilia up in his bedroom as we speak. You're fucking children.
So, all right, we've got a series of something we can do here, and I've got the perfect idea. There was once an episode of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air where Will was being too much of a player, and he got lured into a cabin where he got put in a cage and set on fire. And the fire burned his mascot costume off because he was dressed up like a bird. So, anyway, you have the opportunity to pretend that these people, one of the, well, we'll just say Carl. We'll say Carl is about to meet up with you, and you accept, but he's actually going to show up somewhere else. Where is it, and what's going to happen to him?
He's going to show up at a gay bordello.
Go on.
And they're not going to be like Hollywood stereotypical Will and Grace gay man. I mean, it's going to be like
Dirty Bears.
Because...
That's a good name for a band.
Even better than Mystic Spiral.
Dirty Bears coming to a city near you.
Literally.
It's not over. Bears.
More like, you know, big biker that we borrowed from prison and, you know, he's going to make him his little woman.
Rob Halford gay.
Yeah, there's a previous Ham winner James Adomian once described people in the gay bar in Shreveport, Louisiana. He said it's the type of gay where you don't know if they're threatening you or hitting on you. Like, hey, what are you doing? I'm kind of scared. Good, been looking for you all my life.
Jeez.
All right, Astrid, as our token kinkster, same question. Because I know some fantastic ways to go with this situation.
Yeah, I don't know. See, the thing about kinksters is, like, while there are, of course, a lot of awful kinksters, there are awful types of everybody, we are very much focused on safe, sane, sober, and consensual play. I do not want that for Carl.
That sounds like punishment in and of itself. I like it. You get nothing! Fuck you, Carl! Right.
See, I'm kind of torn. I can either go really, really dark or really, really poetic, because I'm kind of on the fence between having Carl show up at the International NAMBLA Convention dressed as Eric Cartman and just let hilarity ensue, or say, Carl, you get a first-class invitation to the international best sex of all eternity ever show, and you don't get any. Everybody else gets the best sex they have ever had in the history of history, and you get none. Nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
All right. I'm going to go a little different here.
Okay.
Carl accepts the date, but he has to wear a blindfold in his house, right? And all of a sudden, one of those, you know, darts hits his neck and he passes out. He wakes up inside a coffin. He can't get out. Suddenly, he gets out. He's surrounded by 12 other people getting out of their own coffins. He has to reenact everything from the skulls. He has to go through all the skulls trials. And then when that's done, he gets to go through American Ninja, except all of the weapons are real. And when all the weapons are real, they are used, and they are used in the way that Astrid's Kink Club would use them, except these are not kinksters, these are ninjas. And American ninjas don't know how to ninja, so they'll mess up. They won't be able to insert anything in a fun way. It'll be the bad way. It'll tear. It won't be comfortable. So after he's a filet a ninja, he will move on to the final countdown. It will be Eliza on the other side of Battle Dome, and he will have to play a game of Crossfire, but he won't have the handle, and the stipulation on the game will be winner take all. And when winner takes all, because he doesn't have a handle, he only has to watch Eliza win. Eliza gets to reenact the awesome 90s commercial, becomes a nostalgia act, and Carl gets nothing, and he's suffering from his American ninja wounds and has a sigh up what used to be his ass, but is now just a sieve for unpleasant metal. You're welcome.
I'll slow clap that. I will slow clap that.
This is why I don't script shows. I would have never come up with that trying to write it out. So, Eliza, after that fun little detour into mangled body parts, let's talk about Mormonism. I filmed your wedding, and if you ever need your wedding videoed or filmed, you know who to call, besides Ghostbusters. So I really have to ask, for those of you who don't know, this was a Celtic hand-fasting wedding, and it was a full pagan ceremony.
Full pagan ceremony performed by a Wiccan priestess.
Right.
Yes.
So how did
it was very lovely. He put it on YouTube.
Awesome.
Just saying.
How did we get from Joseph Smith Magical AIDS Frog to Central Pennsylvania and pagan Celtic hand fasting?
Okay. Well, golly, when I was at Bliss and slowly drifting away from the church, and my first boyfriend there, the German, I had some pretty serious thoughts, and we had talked marriage, but then I was thinking, well, okay, we can't go into the temple of all that is Mormon holy because he's not a member, because you have to be a member, and you have to be in good standing, and have a temple recommend in order to go into the temple, and, like, I didn't get to see my own sister get married, because I didn't have a temple recommend, so I couldn't go in. And so I got to wait outside with, you know, the family that...
The rest of the heathens.
Members. Yes. So, I was like, okay, so we're not doing that, but, you know, getting married by the bishop in the church and just to have all their judgmental little faces sitting there staring at me. Well, why isn't she getting married in the temple? Well, what's going on? Well, you know, and I was like, okay, but a justice of the peace is just too impersonal in my mind. I don't know. Maybe they could make a really nice ceremony, but so I didn't even know, but I knew I just didn't want that. And then when I was talking to Dylan, and I was like, because he's pagan and has been ever since he was stationed in England when he was in the Air Force years ago, and he went to Stonehenge, and he was like, there's an energy here, there's something different going on, and so, I don't know, something pagan. I don't know all the details of his little descent into heathenism. But I asked him, I was like, so what type of ceremony do pagans typically have? And he's like, oh, hand fasting. I was like, oh, that's cool. Let's do that. And my guilty little pleasure for reading, because I read a lot and I love fiction, is every once in a while I pick up the, you know, horrible little romance book because, I mean, it's just, it's stupid, and when you're single and 30 and you don't have a boyfriend, I mean, you just... You want to get it.
I mean, what time is it? I'm either 21 or 22, and I still love it.
So, you know, so I knew what, like, the basic thing, the history behind it, because I read a lot of historical books and stuff. So, when we started planning it, it was just... I don't know. It was fascinating. And he found this ceremony on YouTube and showed it to me. And it was the most beautiful thing. And it was so personable. And it wasn't damning and judgmental like getting married outside of the temple by the bishop would be. To death you part, and you're all sinners, and you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it could be specialized to you, you know, as opposed to dearly beloved marriage, you know.
It's what brings us together
today.
That blessed arrangement, that dream within a dream.
So... we found this, we found different pieces of ceremony that we pieced together to make what turned into our ceremony. And, I mean, it was a beautiful, beautiful thing because you admit your failings as a human. I mean, part of the vows was, okay, Dylan, will you anger her? I mean, she's German and Irish. She's got a hell of a temper. You know, I mean, it's going to happen at some point. It already has, you know, even before we got married. But, I mean, you work through it. But, you know, well, are you going to anger her? I may. Well, is that your intent? No, it's not. I'm not going out trying to, you know. Yeah. And so you admit that you're not perfect, but you're doing the best you can. And you're working at it. And it was just... I mean, the symbolism and everything behind it was just so beautiful, and I was just like, I want this. It's just so pretty, and it means something.
Yeah.
And it's not run-of-the-mill, same old, okay, Christian ceremony number one, here we go. You know, blah, 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 reading from the Bible, okay, now pronounce you kiss the bride. You know, and
yeah.
So it was just great. And then we started all the little detail plannings into, okay, are we going to have the circle cast beforehand and have to post guards so that nobody steps across it? Because with the ceremony, the priestess casts the circle, and the circle is the Wiccans or pagans' sacred space, because they don't have a church.
Yeah.
So wherever they go is where they worship. And you can... So they cast the circle to consecrate the space for their ritual, their, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. And so we're like, okay, well, if we cast it beforehand, we need to have people there to make sure that nobody crosses it, because that disrupts the energy and all that kind of stuff, you know. And even talking with one of my friends at work who knew what was going on, and he's not judgmental, he's freaking cool. He was like, well, if you have it cast as part of the ceremony when everyone's there, they can feel more included, and they'll know a little more about what's going on.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay. So we had a rope laid out on the ground so that this is where the circle will be cast.
Mm-hmm.
And then each cardinal direction, each point on the compass, is symbolic of one of the four elements, earth, air, fire, and water.
Mm-hmm.
And then they each have their own property. So each of them has a candle that has to be you know, a certain color that correlates with that. And so we had this all laid out, and then we had the altar, and we're like, how are we going to do the altar? Well, initially we had this beautiful slab of oak that I was actually able to get from one of the guys there on base, and it was gorgeous. And then it cracked, and I cried because, I mean, when it was drying, it split, and I mean, it split. My friend thought a chunk had fallen out of it when I showed him the picture, because I mean, it was like a little pie had, was not there, and I was like, no, it didn't fall out. That's the split. It split that far. And I mean, I bawled my eyes out because it was just, we had worked on it, we'd sanded it, gotten all smooth and beautiful. And but then Dylan found this shop online that has these kiln dried pieces of wood that's used for like decorative wall stuff, or if you, you know, killed the deer and you're gonna mount the head, you can use it as a backboard, because and it's from Wisconsin. This is, and it, this is the land of killing stuff around here. Apparently, more so than in El Paso, other than the cartel across the river.
you've seen deer season here, I think.
I have gone walking in the woods, wearing camouflage and orange, holding a gun. That's as far as I've gone.
Okay.
So. Yes, I don't see deer when I'm looking for them. I see deer at work today, just driving around, and they're all over the place.
Yep.
But, so he found this, so we found a piece, and so we keep measuring, because it's, and I'm like, okay, well, is that going to be big enough? Because there's a lot of stuff that goes on the altar. There's the god and goddess candle. There's incense for air, and there's a candle for fire, and there's a bowl of water and a bowl of earth, because this is all part of the ceremony. Plus, we're like, well, we have to have the hand fasting cords, because a hand fasting is we join hands, and with each of our vows, the priestess drops a cord across our hands, and it's symbolic. And then at the end, she says something about, well, just as these cords are binding you, so also do your vows bind you. And then she actually like ties a knot in the cords, and it's all just so beautiful. Sorry, yeah, no, I'm getting all nostalgic.
Okay.
I'm definitely gonna go home and watch my wedding video now.
Exactly. And, I do have it on YouTube if you want to see it, and my YouTube, as always, is in the link. We are almost out of time, so I can't finish up with some of the other questions I have, which just means you'll have to come back sometime. We
That's
won't even
your prerogative.
Have, in lieu of great moments in Ham, I want to dedicate a final fuck you, Carl, to someone who has made someone's miserable year even worse.
Oh.
Our lovely Heather, as you know from each time we say it, has dealt with the worst year I've ever seen.
2016 officially is the worst year ever.
It
yeah.
sucks.
And she was visiting her grandfather and other family members at the cemetery, and she was jumped. And she, I saw pictures, and
oh
I won't, that's all I'm going to say. I didn't ask her about this. That's, you know, I don't know if it's an ongoing investigation. I don't even know if she wants me to talk about it, but I am for the sake of this. I believe each one of us should have one final compliment of Heather, because we just want her to get back to us and stop having terrible things happen, and we want to wish very, very, very ill harm on someone who could see an adorable, beautiful woman like that and decide, you know what I really need to do? Bruise her up. Mm-hmm. So, same order, one final tribute for our friend here.
You know, Heather, I've yet to meet you in person, but I've talked to you a little bit, and I told you when we talked that I hoped that you found, like, 50K on the ground in a box with a puppy guarding it, because it felt really shitty for me to talk to you and give you my condolences, only to say, oh, have a good day. Honestly, you are so deserving of all of the good things in life that you should just find one of those every day. And I am just so excited to either be able to buy you a drink, which has now been upgraded to, like, several bottles of champagne, or just, like, so many cakes that you fall into a food coma.
Well, the first you're going to be able to do in 2 weeks from Sunday.
I know. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm very excited.
So, and you're fuck you, Carl, to the person who attacked her.
Holy shit, if I ever find out who you are, I am personally going to beat you up.
Yeah, good enough. Eliza?
I have not met Heather at all. I have heard her talking a bunch. So I will say, I hope that you have a very successful comedy career that exceeds the likes of Jeffafa Dunham and his puppets, which are absolutely hilarious, but that's another point altogether. And that you can tour the world and see all kinds of things and bring laughter and joy to everyone, which just can brighten anyone's day. I mean, it can be a crappy day, and you throw some good comedy out there, and it just lightens the mood a bunch. And so I wish you hella success with comedy stuff. That'd be great.
And to the person who attacked her?
I carry a gun on a daily basis.
Don't mess with this one. Brian?
Heather, we love you.
Yeah.
That's all that I can say. We love you, Heather. We really do.
And to the person who attacked her?
There is a very, very, very special level of hell awaiting you, sir. The only question in my mind is, which weapon am I going to use to send you there?
And I want to say that Heather is like a sister to me. And ever since she came on the show as a guest, she became part of our family. And there's a lot of things that I could say, but I keep her confidence, and I just know what a beautiful person she is from the time we got to spend together, and I know how much she loved her grandfather, how much she loved her friend, and all the friends that she still has with us, and I know that she would be here with all of us if she could. She has just suffered the worst luck of anyone I've seen in recent memory, and she does not deserve any of it. She has a beautiful heart, a smile that could light up the night sky, and she is a darling, and I am so grateful that she's in my life because I reached out to her and, you know, very early in this show brought her to all of you, and she became part of our amazing banner done by Chris, and, you know, she brought a lot of fans with her who are fans of her comedy because she is funny. And she is hilarious, and she is a wonderful human being, and she has touched everybody she knows and everybody she's met. And for someone to go after someone I care about that much, someone who has suffered more than anyone should ever have to, I won't even get violent here. I will simply say that you are not deserving to be in the presence of someone who has touched so many lives and who has brought laughter and smiles and hugs and just this warm aura and embrace to people that she cares about. I have watched her walk down the city streets and look back to see if I'm watching out for her, and she should not have to do that. She should not have to go visit her grandfather and be looking over her back. She is one of the greatest people I know. And the fact that any of the things that have happened to her have happened this year, those are one thing. Those were life. Most of those could not be controlled, but you had the choice. You saw someone in a cemetery who was obviously still mourning because Heather wears her heart on her sleeve, and you saw that as an opportunity to go after money, drugs, whatever it was. Instead of being a decent person and moving on for whatever it is you want, you went after my Heather. And for that, I hope there is no point in your life that you ever come into contact with anybody with that capacity, with that soul, with that drive to be something, and to give everything that she has back out to her family, to her friends, and to complete strangers on the internet. You are not worthy of being in the presence of anyone that awesome, and I hope you die alone and never, ever have the opportunity to be in her presence or anyone else's who even mildly resembles her physically, emotionally, or in capacity for goodness. Fuck you, Carl.
Fuck you, Carl.
With that, we're going to wrap up.
Jeez. Oh,
and we're going to leave you with Jesse Dollimore telling you how you can support the show like we all do and like our friend Eliza here has. And we've reached our second goal, so we are getting much closer to being self-sufficient on this show.
Very cool.
And we will continue bringing you awesome guests like Eliza, and we will bring her back because there are so many more questions we have to ask. We didn't even get to half of the things we wanted to talk about because it was that much fun. Eliza, thank you for coming on. Please send me where we can follow your blog. If you could put it on the show notes, we'll put it on there so people can reach out to you and tell you how awesome you are, because you are. She was afraid to come on the show. She thought she'd be too boring. We went overtime.
Really?
We went overtime.
I believe we've set a new record.
I am a very boring individual. I have no life.
Well, clearly you need to hang out here more often. Just saying.
We can swap wow stories.
Yeah. And I can go do literally anything else during that. All right. I know I got tired kids here, and late.
And tired co-hosts.
Indeed. But this was a ton of fun. Thank you, Eliza. Thank you, all of our patrons. And we will be back on Friday. And thank you for everyone who supports the show. And be sure to give Heather a little extra love. And we hope she's back soon, and we hope 2016 stops being the worst year ever.
Yes.
Good night.
Inciting Incident couldn't keep bringing you commentary, interviews, and fantastic guests without help from you, the patrons. You can support the podcast on a monthly basis at patreon.com/incitingincident, which gives you access to many great rewards, including a free t-shirt if you pledge $5 or more. You can also support the show by subscribing, rating, reviewing, and commenting. To contact them about ideas, guests, disagreements, fisticuffs, salmon slapping, rebel rousing, or just plain old tomfoolery, you can email them at incitingincidentpodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook at facebook.com/incitingincidentpodcast. Or yell into a tin cup and hope it's connected to one of our aforementioned string networks. And now, back to the show.
Driving up toward Green Bay, the east, the sun's in the rearview mirror. Both had some pretty tough weeks, wide knuckles try to steer. A few more miles, there's no telling what we'll find. All we gotta do is take a little time. We all gotta find our own ways to love and hope and breathe again. For some that just happens to be on the shores of Lake Michigan. You can't explain the way a city grips your mind. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Waves flow right in and hair rocks and vanish from our sight. Kinda like those troubles that wash away quicker in the moonlight. This crazy old world's got no reason or rhyme. All we gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Little to no chance for all that stormy weather, no. It appears conditions won't get much better for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan. Sometimes this old world seems much worse than it should be. Couple days later, you're sitting and thinking how lovely. I won't question the scope or design. All I gotta do is take a little time for you and me and the moon and Lake Michigan.